Blog Talk Radio.
Well, well, well. What's happening, everybody? This is Wardell Potts Jr. for Solar Records Radio. Welcome to Solar Wants to Dance. today, like Jeffrey Daniels. Man, we would, man, that boy, it looked like his bones were breaking. I mean, I didn't understand what he was doing there. Like, how could you, I couldn't figure that one out. That was just crazy. That's my boy, Jeffrey Daniels. And, guys, he's going to be coming in shortly. We're going to just, you know, let everybody get tuned in, logged into the show and get ready, you know, to hear. I just got the phone with Jeffrey, as a matter of fact, and so he's moving around and getting ready for you guys. And so, but anyway, I hope you guys are well. All is good for you and your family, and things are good. Man, we want to just have a good time. You know, Solar Wants to Dance is usually a show where it's a cardiovascular, and, you know, basically, we just want to make sure we're moving, right, and staying busy and not being couch potatoes, especially at my age, you know. And so my doctor gave me instructions. This is what you need to do. Work out 3 times a week for at least a half an hour straight. And so I thought that was easy, but when I started, it wasn't as easy as I thought it was. And and so I was like, oh, my God. Hold on. Let me see here. All right. So we are something's happening here. Okay. What? Okay. All right. So anyway, we have a lot of stuff going on. We are Jeffrey is in Africa. And so he's calling in from Africa. So they're trying to get everything working together. And so they just give me an update. But anyway, so I hope you guys are doing good. I am trying to do what, like, my doctor told me to do. Take care of yourself, Wardell. You know, exercise 3 times. So 20 minutes I thought was going to be easy. And it really kicked my butt. I mean, it really kicked my butt. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And I ended up figuring it out and started enjoying it. And then I started appreciating it. I started appreciating the fact that I was doing the right thing for me, right, and taking care of myself. And I'm so grateful that I listened to my doctor, right? I listened to the doctor and you know, sometimes people get upset with doctors. I hear all kind of different complaints that people have with their doctors, and they just, you know, they just don't want to do right. Right? And so, but a lot of times we end up in trouble when we don't want to do right. So that's not the way I want to go. So anyway, so that's what this show is always about and stuff. But also I want to have a good time with my brother from my label mate, Mr. Jeffrey Daniels, you know, from Shalimar. And, you know, for those of you who didn't know, Jeffrey Daniels also taught Michael Jackson how to do the moonwalk. And so it was called a backslide, and then Michael changed the name to moonwalk, but that's what it's called, the backslide Jeffrey Daniels was doing with Shalimar all the time. And Michael, of course, with his, you know, his expertise is peeping that, and that's something I want to do. I want that. And so Jeffrey taught him that, and Michael, you know, did his thing with it and just really blessed the world watching a man move like that. It looked like someone is pulling you. And so I practice every once in a while in my white socks on the hardwood floor, and I'll just slide. And I still can't do it. So anyway, but guys, let's keep going. Let's keep it going. I'm going to see what these guys are talking about, how they're trying to hook us. Jeffrey is in Lagos. Lagos, Nigeria. And so that they're trying to connect us right now. So anyway, just if you want to get going and you want to get that cardio going, come on and hang out with us. We're going to do this. This is Wardell Potts Jr., and this is our new single, Dynasty's new single, I Can Tell, on Solar Records Radio. So thanks so much for hanging out, and let's get going with the cardio. Time for cardio. Let's do it. right, guys. You warm up? Ready to go? Come on, Tony.
Come on. hit my sweet spot streak, got back on lit. Beat by Keith Rock, talk that plotting, planning, baking in hand. Shaking, no faking, while making demands. A little tension in the hood, but I'm loved by my fans. Stand where I stand, and I get it from my hands. Really don't talk when it's time to do a dance. Take a chance on yourself like I did on me. I was amazed like a kid on me. No smut, no me. So far up that I can't look now, but every once in a while I find my way back down.
When time gets tough, I wanna give it up, and I just can't let go like that.
Nah.
And for how long it took to build it up, there must be some reason why he coming back.
Can all the people say? Hear you say, yeah, come on now, yeah, feel good to you, yeah, cause it's good for you, come on, yeah, get your groove on, or get your skate on, roll on.
Hey doggy, yeah, what's that mean?
That mean I'm back on the road, getting dough everywhere that I go, give a
back on the road, getting more dough, and tell them Snoop Dogg said so.
When time gets tough, I wanna give it up, and I just can't let go like that. And for how long it took to build it up, there must be some reason why he coming back.
Man, oh man, I just love. Unfortunately, that was the very end of it that my buddy got to hear here. But anyway, that is it. And I'm so blessed and so grateful because I have my buddy, my label mate, my good friend that I've been blessed with so many years on the line with us right now, the Pop Along Kid, Mr. Jeffrey Daniels. What's up, Jeff?
They call me the Papa Long Kid.
There
How
you
doing,
go.
Wardell?
Hey, man. Oh, man, what a blessing. It's so nice to hear your voice always. And you're such a gentleman. And I really appreciate that about you, man. You've always been so kind. You know, your celebrity never really got in the way of you just being a good man and kind to people. And I even watch, see how you respond to all the fans and stuff. So you're so generous, man, and you've always been that way. And so I'm just so grateful that God has brought you into my life and blessed me. And I thank God that you're still in my life. So thank you for being the man that you are, my brother.
Oh, man, bless you very much. I mean, you know, it's the way we came up. Come on. It's the way we came up. And especially... at Solar, which came later, but, you know, from that time on, you came out from Philly, you know,
right.
Howard came out from Ohio, you know, all of
yeah.
us got together, and we just got together, and we gelled, and we did our thing. It wasn't about ego, it wasn't about attitude, it was about, and, you know, looking back on it now, we didn't know where we were going to go, we didn't know
right.
how far it was going to take us, so we were just blessed fortunate to be in the position that we were in, and then now looking back in hindsight at it, we can look back at our body of work and hearing other people's reaction to what we did, and now we feel like, well, I guess we did do something. Yeah, I guess we did do something. But, you know, I'm just so proud of all of us. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of what you're doing there with your Solar Radio show. I know that you got fans overseas in the UK and all these places, and people are tuning in and keeping up with you. So you're keeping the torch, keeping the fire burning. You pass the torch on and you just go. It's like the Olympics. You know, you got the torch now.
Well, you know, yeah, I do love to wear and share the Solar flag. I love keeping the legacy of Solar alive because it's been such a blessing to not just us, but so many of the listeners and so many of my friends that have said, man, those songs you guys did really, you know, there was times when they changed my life. They helped me along the way as I was going through some very difficult times. And, you know, Jeff, I was just saying this yesterday when we did the show about Solar. It was that music that we did was really, if you just think about it, most of the songs that we did was about love. It was really about love, right? Most of it was about it's going to be okay. Don't worry. You just got to, you know. And man, oh, man. So
even if not the love songs, but things that people could, it's applicable for people's life. You know, things that people can take and draw on with their own life experience. If it's about relationship, it's about partying, it's about, you know, the things we're talking about were relevant and people could relate to it in their life, you know. But here's the crazy thing, Wardell. Here's the crazy thing about it with us and Solar. I know that Stevie Wonder's music, the Jacksons' music, the Beatles, Paul McCartney, that's like the soundtrack to my life. When I think about it, you know, there's others too. I can't name everybody, but just for instance. But now to have people come back and tell us that the Solar music was like the soundtrack of their lives, that is surreal. That is like one of the biggest compliments. I mean, it's like, wow, us, me, you know.
Wow, it is. It's amazing. But not only were you the sound that did that, but you were also the vision. You always had a very beautiful expression with the music. You took the music from just being music, but you visualized it and you showed us how beautiful it could be through your dancing and stuff. How did you get into dancing in that way?
The only way I can explain it, and it's the most simplest story, and I tell everybody, I'm the youngest in my family. I'm the only boy, so I have two older sisters and my mother. My father didn't raise us. So I was only following my family. I was doing what my mother and sister did. I was singing with them in church. We had a church group. And then my mother formed the choir, but we danced. And my two older sisters, Janice and Joyce and I, we danced. My middle sister, Joyce, the closest one to me, well, we went to John Muir Junior High School, and I went to Barry McLaughlin Junior High School. I went to John Adams High School. We moved around a lot. But while we were in junior high school, if we got into a dance contest together, nobody could beat us. And I remember one time me and my sister won a dance contest, and after we won, they put on a victory song for we could dance together. We won like a transistor radio and this thing. And they put on a slow record, and they didn't know we're brothers and sisters. I said, huh? I'm not dancing. I'm not going to dance with my sister to this song. That's a slow song. What am I going to do? And they didn't know that we're brother and sister. And my sister Joyce was my first partner that I danced with on Soul Train before I started dancing with Jody Watley. I was dancing with my sister Joyce on Soul Train.
Nice. What was the difference in age between you and Joyce?
Like about a year and a half. Something like
close. Real close. Yeah, y'all were close.
We were close. Yeah, we're very close.
And so when you went from that to Soul Train, when did this? It looks like your bones are breaking when you're dancing. Yeah, like what is this? You know, and it's like you captivate us because it's like. You know, what is he doing? How did you get into the locking and the pop locking and all that stuff?
Well, see, I was, as I said, I was always dancing with my family. And so when I was like about 5 years old, 5 to 6 years old, we lived in Aliso Village near some projects in East L.A. on the other side of Little Tokyo, over the famous First Street Bridge where they do all the movies going over that bridge downtown. And so at Utah Street Elementary School, and we would have a dance contest. They would have I don't know if it was a contest or not. I was young anyway, but they were dancing. And it's like the Smith family, the Willis family, the Blunt family, the Jones family, and then here's the Daniel kids. It would get heated up, and my sisters would get out there, and they would dance, and my sisters were really good. Just when it got to the climax, they would throw little Jeffrey out into the middle, and we were doing this, coincidentally enough, we're doing a dance called the Philly Dog, where we used to shake our head like in a circle really, really fast. And yes. I remember the song, the Funky, Funky Broadway, and it would get down to that drum job. Down on Broadway, they got a street now, Funky, Funky Broadway. When it went to that drum solo, I would start flicking my head so fast that I couldn't even, everything looked like a blur. And that was it. Everybody would just fall out when little Jeffrey jumped in the middle of that circle and did that. And that's what got me started. So I'm at home on a Saturday afternoon. Fast forward, I'm about 15 years old, and I'm watching cartoons, as I used to do every Saturday morning. One time, the cartoons went off, and this program came on, and these kids were dancing, and they looked good, and they were dancing, and it was Soul Train, and that changed my life. It was like my life's ambition, endeavor, was to be on that TV show. It would take a while before I got there, but Soul Train, that was it. That was the only place on the planet for me to be once I saw that show. And when I saw Don Campbell come down the Soul Train line, we didn't know the names yet, but when I saw Don Campbell come down the Soul Train line, do a split, come up, punch his shoulder, stick out his own hand and give himself five, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm gone. Then when I saw Charles Robox do the robot, he was the first guy to do the robot. His name was Charles Robox. Then Robot Slim, who was a member of the Lockers, I would go up to Maverick's flat just to watch them dance. And I was too young to get in. They would kick me out. I would sneak into the back door. And I had to be at Maverick's flat because I heard the Soul Train dancers went there. There would be Don Campbell, Penguin, Robot Slim. Who else? Fluky Luke would come sometimes because Fluky Luke lived out in Orange County. But he would come sometimes. And I would just sit up and watch these guys dance all night, and I'd go home and practice. And then I was the best dancer at Dorsey High School because I was learning directly from the Lockers.
Wow. My goodness.
Just by watching them. Just by watching them, you know. I didn't know them. I could, you know, I would say hi to them, but it's like I'm this little kid, you know, who's this little guy? But I would watch them, and I would go home and just practice. I would just practice. And I just kept doing it, you know. And then from there on, I formed my dance group and this and that. And that, I met Tyrone Proctor. And Tyrone Proctor, my big brother, bless his heart, bless his soul, may he rest in peace. He's the one that walked me into Soul Train for the very first time, Tyrone Proctor.
Wow. Yeah, rest in peace, Tyrone. So what was that like, walking into Soul Train for the very first time for Jeffrey Daniels?
Oh, my God. Okay, first of all, they said I can get in, but I couldn't dance. So I had to sit down. So I sat down.
How did you sit down with all those ants in your pants?
Well, it didn't last for long. And I was surprised at how small the studio looked compared to the way it looked on TV, you know.
Right.
So it was not that it was tiny, but it just, it didn't, you know, you're seeing the foreground and the backdrop, and you're seeing the ceiling. You're seeing the things that you don't see on TV when you're sitting there, and then you're watching all these cameras. Then I'm seeing all my favorite dancers, Pat Davis, James Phillips, of course, Tyrone Proctor, Sharon Hill. Sometimes the Lockers would come in and out. Shabadoo, his sister Fawn. God, can I name Little Joe Chisholm, Demeter Joe Freeman. I mean, these are my heroes.
Right,
I'm there. And they are there, but I don't know them, but I'm just looking at them. Diana Bruner, oh, my God, Mickey Lord, Gary Keyes. Oh, the list goes on and on. But they're my favorite dancers, and I'm watching them. I'm in there, but I'm just this little guy, you know. So a good record came on, and I snuck out on the floor, and I danced. And when the record stopped, I went and sit down, and this big, fat guy named Jolly stood over me and said, "I saw you. I told you not to dance." And he said it in a loud voice. I was so embarrassed. You know, like in the Flintstones, when Fred Flintstone shrinks like to a small size.
Okay.
He's screaming at me in front of all my dance heroes, and I just shrunk. But that was the beginning of it, man. Nothing could keep me off that floor, and nothing could keep me away from Soul Train. And eventually, Chuck Johnson started letting me in as a regular.
Oh, my God. That is so cool. Man, I love the story inside the story. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You can't stop now.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking to Jeffrey Daniels from Shalimar, and Jeffrey happens to be on in Africa. So he's in Lagos, Nigeria right now. And so, you know, speaking with us. And so thank you, Jeffrey, for taking this time out and going through. I know you had to go through a lot to make this happen. And we love you and appreciate that.
Oh, my God.
Really appreciate that.
The internet, man, the internet, it won this time. I had to download Firefox, but I still couldn't connect it and blah, blah, blah. So I just said, okay, come on, let me call. So I just now just call straight through. And actually, I'm in Abuja. I do have a place in Lagos. I do stay down in Lagos, but I'm in Abuja. I've been in Abuja over the past couple of years, but I still have my place in Lagos.
Okay. Wow. Anyway, all right, so you're far away, and we don't want to burn your line up too much, but we do. We want to hear
I'm okay.
from you. Okay, cool. All right, great. So why don't you just go ahead and continue. Now, how did you and Jody Watley come together? How did that, you know, how did because that's really the beginning of Shalimar, as far as I'm concerned. How did that all come together?
Okay, well, I met Jody when she was 12 years old because her mother and her brother came out. Because my godfather is Reverend James Cleveland, who is the king of gospel. And I was in his youth choir, the Voices of Cornerstone. So Jody's mother is in the adult choir. I'm in the youth choir. And Jody's just sitting in the congregation because Jody wasn't singing at all. You know, no one knew that she'd sing. I don't even know if she knew she could sing. And so Jody eventually moved out to L.A. with her mother and her brother. So she was going to Dorsey High School. So Jody got onto Soul Train with a friend of hers, and I'm on Soul Train. Then my sister made me mad because I went at the dance, a good record was on, and my sister was either outside smoking or doing something, messing around, and I got angry, so I stopped dancing with my sister. That's when I started going to Jody's house after school, because she was still in school, and I go to her house after school. She was about 16 now, and we would practice dance steps and dance routines because we were trying to be like Tyrone Proctor and Sharon Hill, you know, because Tyrone and Sharon was like, they were the dance couple at that time. They had just won a car on American Bandstand, on the American Bandstand dance contest. And you know, so that's my big brother. So I was trying to be like Tyrone. So then me and Jody started making up all these dance routines. And then I started adding in my comedy with it. Because, you know, I was a big fan of Charlie Chaplin, Danny Kaye, Laura and Hardy, all that kind of stuff. And so I would add in all my little antics and funny stuff and, you know, creativity and stuff like that. That's what differentiated me from Tyrone and Sharon. And then sometimes the four of us would dance together, Tyrone, Sharon, Jeffrey, and Jody. We'd be the Fantastic Four. And Cleveland Moses, you know, Junior, he would be with us too. And so Jody and I just started dancing, and we became one of the prominent dance couples on the show. Just like there was Tyrone and Sharon, there was Jeffrey and Jody, there was this one and that one and that one and that one, you know. So we really made a name. Then Soul Train Records. Don Cornelius and Dick Griffey formed a record company, Soul Train Records. I auditioned for the Soul Train gang, and they didn't pick me, and I was devastated. I was devastated. So the Soul Train gang came out. They made a couple of albums. Then I got a call from Dick Griffey because one of the members of the Soul Train gang, Hollis Pippins, dropped out. So they selected me and put me in to replace him. So they flew me out to Washington, D.C. We were doing this matinee and an evening show for like a week or so. It was New Birth, the Soul Train Gang, Ray Goodman and Brown. Oh, my God, who else was on that show? It was a few people on the same bill. So I did that for like a week or so. It was almost Christmas time. But when we came off of it, I went back home. And then I got a call from Don Cornelius. He said, Jeffrey, the Soul Train gang, that's not happening anymore. So we're going to do away with that. And I'm like, oh, my God, they just put me in the group. He said, no, we're going to build a group around you.
Whoa. Wow.
Now, let me tell you how it happened. What was the impetus of that? Okay. Let me tell you how that happened. One time I was with the Soul Train gang Dick Griffey and Don Cornelius took us out to this private club in Beverly Hills. I think it was called The Place or My Place. My Place or The Place. It one of those places. So they took us out to this club in Beverly Hills, and this song came on. And it was a collage of Motown hits. And I heard Smokey Robinson singing, and disco had just started. So I'm like, wow, Motown is doing a disco song. I'm the only person that paid attention to that song. And I'm like, wow. And they said, no, Jeffrey, that's not Smokey Robinson. I said, really? It sounds just like Smokey. Then, this whole collage of Motown songs went off. Little did I know, they had purchased that song. That was their song.
Ah.
That would be the first song for Shalimar.
Wow. Wow.
Being that I was the only person that was excited about it, and they looked at me like, okay. So when they broke up the Soul Train gang, they said, we need to do something with this song and with this guy, Jeffrey. So they asked me, did I know a girl who can sing? Let me show you how small the world is. They asked me, did I know a girl who can sing? I knew the DeBarges, El DeBarge and her cousin Mickey Braden, because she sang at the church, Bethel Pentecostal, back in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So we called for Mickey Braden, but she was pregnant. So she couldn't come.
Right.
So I started rehearsing Jody's voice after school. And one day, Dick said, can she sing? I said, well, so she went to Dick's place and she sang for Dick. Dick said, okay, that's fine. This is cool. We'll use Jody. Up until then, Jody had just never really pursued a vocal career. She wanted to be a fashion designer, which she did design some of Shalimar's costumes. In fact, quite a few of them.
Wow. What?
You know, oh, and one more thing. I have to get this out. That song that was first put together for Uptown Festival was recorded under the name Sam and Kitty. Well, the lady named Kitty is really Cleo Kennedy, and she was in James Cleveland's adult choir next to Jody Watley's mother.
Wow.
That's them singing on their first, on the Uptown Festival. Yeah.
That's really insane. Man. Wow. So let me just ask you this. I'm going to back up just a tad. When you and Jody were constantly working out and doing y'all thing together before this group thing came up about, you know, when you went with the Soul Train group, when they asked you, we want you to join the group and you need to go to Washington, D.C., did Jody feel like you would be separated away from her?
No, like, because we'd always were, Jody and I were such we're like an appendages of each other or something. Some people used to call me Jody by accident. Some people say, oh, Jody, I'm sorry, Jeffrey. That's how close we were, that people would even mistake our names.
Wow.
We never thought about it like that. She was excited for me and happy for me, but of course, every time I'd come back, we would dance on Soul Train. We'd continue dancing. And I was trying to make a group of us, and we already formed a dance group called the Outrageous Whack Dancers with me, Jody, Tyrone, Sharon, Hill, Cleveland Moses Jr., Kurt Washington, and that. So we'd already had a group called the Outrageous Whack Dancers, and I was trying to put music into that.
Wow. Man, oh, man. Jeffrey, how old were you?
Ooh, I was in my teens still, like between 18 to 19, going into 20, once I'm in Shalimar yet, and so 18 and 19. And I was even DJing at Maverick's Flat every Sunday night for Soul Train night. I was DJing.
What are your parents? What is this boy? Does he ever come home? Is he never going to? I mean, you were destined to do this, and you were destined to be in this business. I mean, you were busy. How could you be that busy?
We don't think about it like that back then because we're looking at our peers, the people, you know, we're looking at Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson and the Jackson Brothers and the Silvers and this and that. So who are we, you know? So I'm doing my thing, just doing what I felt compelled to do. You know, it was in me. And nothing could keep me out. I wasn't supposed to be in Maverick's Flat because I was still just 17. I would sneak into the back door. I wasn't supposed to dance on Soul Train, but Tyrone took me up there, but I snuck out on the dance floor anyway. I failed as the audition to be in the Soul Train gang, but a member dropped off, and then they put me in, and then they built a group around me. I was just so determined, and they saw that in me. They saw the tenacity and the focus that I had and the ambition that I had. They saw the drive that I had, I guess. And of course, I have to thank Dick Griffey and Don Cornelius for seeing that in me and allowing me the opportunity to be a part of, you know, their institution and their legacy. Of course, I have to thank them.
Yes.
As much as I have to thank Leon Silvers for putting such amazing music together for us. I mean, I don't know if Leon Silvers is being praised enough for that one man being the sound of Los Angeles. Of course, there were more people like yourself and Dana Myers and Richard Randolph.
Oh, yeah.
And
but he was the chef in the kitchen.
Kevin Spencer, William Shelby, bless his heart, man. We lost William Shelby.
Man.
Bless his heart. But, you know, Leon was the adhesive. He's the one that pulled all that together and got you guys together and made all that happen, you know. So
he
I cannot sing enough praises for
Leon.
Yeah,
he definitely doesn't get enough credit for that. He is so underrated. I mean, because the whole sound of music changed when Solar started with you guys and the Whispers and, you know, I mean, it's like, whoa, this is a whole new sound. This is something completely different. You know, and so and to not get credit for that, and some of the biggest producers out there now that are getting awards say it's because of Leon Silvers that took them under his wing, like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, you know, Babyface in L.A.
Right.
I mean, these guys know, you know, I mean, they have to give him the props because he was the one that was making a difference. And so, but anyway, man, I mean, your story is just amazing. It is. It's so.
But wait a minute, Wardell. How can you talk about this so objectively? Like you're on the outside looking in. You're Mr. Metrodome. You're playing the drums on all those hits.
Yes. But this is your story today. This is about you, man. And I am so. You know. Thanks for you know, always including me. But you know, it's just. I want to continue with, you know, your story, your amazing journey. Because so the Shalimar thing started taking off. You guys started just selling records left and right. And then I can you tell us, well, did you get involved with Michael Jackson before you went to London and did your solo appearances on behalf of Shalimar?
Yes, of course, because
So how did that happen?
Shalimar was performing at the Grad Nights at Disneyland, and I had met Michael in 1979 at an after party after one of their concerts, because Dick Griffey was their concert promoter. So Dick took me over there and introduced me to Michael, and he goes, "Yeah, Michael, this is one of my artists, Jeffrey Daniel. He's a member of Shalimar." You know how Dick talks. And then, do you know what Michael did? This is Michael Jackson coming off stage at the Forum at a sold-out show, standing in Chasen's restaurant club in Beverly Hills. Dick Griffey introduced me to him as a member of Shalimar, and Michael goes, "Oh, yeah, the second time around." I'm like, "You know our record?" Little did I know, Michael knew who I was all along because he was watching me on Soul Train. I was one of his favorite dancers on Soul Train, and I did. I never would have guessed it. How would I have known? How was I supposed to know something like that?
Yeah, true. I mean, but, you know, you just was out there, and then you had a hit song that came out with you. I mean, come on. You were just, you know. So he introduced you to Michael and finished with it. So what happened after that?
Okay, that's in 1979. So 1980, when Shalimar was performing at the Disneyland for the Grad Nights, Michael came and he brought little Janet Jackson with him, because that's when I started doing, you know, the backslide and body popping, which I give credit to the Electric Boogaloos, Casper and Cooley, you know. So I'm doing it on stage and I'm gliding all the way across the stage, you know, and people are going bananas. So Michael came and he watched it on the side of the stage. And that's when he got in touch with me and said that he wanted me, you know, to work with him and teach him to dance. And Casper and Cooley went and worked with him too. But Michael wanted to do it like Jeffrey Daniel.
That's funny. Daniel. Okay.
And of course, Michael took it and made it his own. You know, he did his thing with it too, you know, but
right.
that's that's the genesis. That's how it all started. And then, as you said, I went over to London and I did my thing on Top of the Pops. I introduced the dance to the UK in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Then Michael does it at the Motown 25th in 1983, and it becomes the moonwalk. The now becomes the moonwalk.
Right.
You know?
That's
I'm in the audience. I was there. I was there at the Motown 25th, sitting in the audience. Yeah. And so the funny thing about it is Jody was sitting over there with Dick Griffey. I'm sitting over here with my friends from Gabon, Africa. There are a couple of people there. Michael goes into it. The whole place is all excited. He's doing Billie Jean. The moment Michael did the backslide, Dick Griffey and Jody looked at me. My other friends looked at me. But the rest of the people looking at Michael. That was so funny.
Now, how did Michael learn how to do that?
We taught him. We taught him. You know, Casper and Cooley worked with him, and I worked with him as well.
Okay. All right.
So we taught him.
So what is your thoughts about the way that he did what you taught him? Is he a good student?
Michael is a workaholic. Like, I was going to his house on Sundays, and he had to just still when he lived at the Jackson family house over in Havenhurst in Encino. And he had over the garage or something, there was a place called the gallery. And so he put a wooden floor down, a nice square wooden floor. And that's where we would go and rehearse, you know, on Sundays and stuff. And it's never like, okay, I'm tired, let's go. It's like, are you okay? Okay, are you okay? Are you going to do more? I mean, he was like a sponge, and that's what made him the greatest entertainer in the world.
Wow.
Not just dancing, but music and songwriting and the whole performance thing. And he was a sponge, and he would just suck everything up, just absorb everything and put it into himself and then Michael Jacksonize it. Like, he would go to Las Vegas to watch Sammy Davis Jr. when Sammy was doing the Candyman and all that.
Right.
He would watch all his famous favorite entertainers, and he would just absorb from here and there and there and here, and then put his own thing into it and just, like, Michaelize it. I guess that's the only way to describe it. He would take it and Michaelize it.
Right. Man, that's thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. Now, you know, we got a little bit more to go here. I want to ask you a couple more questions. How can you share, one of your most memorable experiences working with Leon Silvers?
There's so many, but okay, let me see, how can I do this? Of course, working with him in the studio, Leon was like, he was a stickler for perfection.
Absolutely.
You know, he would not let nothing slide.
Nothing.
You know, and it was like you're in a classroom in a sense. You know, it's like, okay, Jeffy, wait a minute, you're sharp there, so let's go back and do it again. Okay, you're flat, now bring it back again. Okay, Howard, you're just a little too ahead of time. Lay it back, lay it in the beat. Okay, so he's behind the glass because we could see him. We're in the sound booth around the microphone. And he's on the other side, and once the music starts, you know, he starts bobbing his head. And that's when he had the big afro, and all you can see is his head bobbing. And that his head alone would keep you in time. All you have to do is watch his head, and you'd be in the pocket.
That was your metronome.
That was the metronome. And there's a whole thing, you know, it's got to be in the pocket, you know, in the pocket. But the real blessing with Leon is he had an open-door policy that, okay, if you want to contribute something, but if it lays, it stays. But if it ain't working, be prepared to be vetoed because you'll get the veto if it ain't working. But if it was cool, fine. Let's throw that in there. Let's add that in there. He had an open door policy, which made it a very healthy working environment because it encouraged us to grow. It encouraged us to be better and to do more and to contribute more. And I can't thank him enough. For me, being raised in that environment where I was encouraged to be who I am, and as I was learning from him and all the other musicians that were there.
Yes. Oh man. And so, I want to keep moving here with you, man. It's so much stuff to talk to you about, and And I just want to say thank you, man, for, you know, being open and sharing this information about your relationships with so many amazing people that you have been blessed to go down this journey with. I want to also, we have people overseas asking questions. And one of them is, looking back, how does it feel to know where, hold on, let me get this over here, setting trends in the music and fashion? Looking back, how does it feel to know that you were setting trends in the music and fashion? How does that feel?
I would tell you guys something. What was the reason for me getting into fashion the way I did? Because I didn't have money. So when I was first dancing on Soul Train, I didn't have money. And I couldn't buy some clothes like the rest of the kids, some of the nice, the big platform shoes, the high quality ones, the nice bell-bottom pants made out of like knit material and stuff. So I used to go to thrift shops, secondhand shops, and I used, and where is it, the place, is it the Salvation Army? I used to go to different places, and then I found out some shops on Melrose Avenue. And I would just take what I had and buy things and match them together to turn them into outfits. And to this day, like if you open up my closet, I'm not a designer name person. It's not about Gucci, Versace, and Louis Vuitton something. But I have amazing things because I got this one from Japan. I got this from London. I got this from Nigeria. And I throw them together and I turn them into something that looks great. So dancing on Soul Train, it really gave me the reason and the necessity to look good and try to look good until I started making some money and then I can buy some nice things. So inadvertently, I became a trendsetter because I became very fashion conscious of how to put things together and how to make things work, you know. And then I went on to make dear friends with the Japanese designer Kansai Yamamoto and Michiko Koshino and Vivian Westwood of The World's End and Malcolm McLaren. And so, you know, I moved over to the UK, I really got involved. And Japan, I got involved with really professional fashion designers, and I did fashion shows for them and stuff like that. So I was really authentically in the fashion world. I did the Paris Fashion Week for Vivian Westwood. I did the London Fashion Week for Michiko Koshino. And I did a super show for Kansai Yamamoto for a TV show in Japan.
Man. You are something else, buddy. And you had a very unique style from the beginning. And then, you know, as your celebrity grew, you know, your style, like most people, just continues to embellish, and you just did it so well. And man, oh man, I became a fan of yours as my friendship with you was growing. I became a fan because you really lived it. You were that guy. You were doing it, and you did it well. And we were all so proud of you. And it was just nice to say that's my friend right there. One more question from overseas, and then I want to get into what you're doing now. Let me see. How did the Friends album come about, and how did the songs? Where did the songs come from?
Okay, here is the format. Shalimar would be touring about 9 months out of the year, and we'd come off the road, take a couple of weeks rest or so, and Leon would already have some ideals and some songs, you know, kind of like in progress as
right.
we're putting other songs together. And that went on for a few albums, you know. So we'd come off the road, and then they'd set up a studio date. We'd come in, and Leon would start playing us some ideals and some tracks that we have, and, you know. And so the Friends album itself, at that time, Shalimar started gaining a lot of ground. And it was time to, like, really stand on our own. And Leon was aware of that because he knew at this time he had a group that was becoming a very successful group. And so I think from that point, I think we may have been more conscious of the quality and the trend of the songs to maintain that momentum that Shalamar is now gaining, you know, because now you got to keep up with it now. And that's a tough thing to do because now, you know, your worst competition can be yourself sometimes. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to keep yourself focused and to keep yourself in the game, to keep yourself relevant, because when you go in the studio, you're going in there a few months before your album's going to come out. And so what's relevant at that time that you're going in the studio, you can finish the album and there could be a whole new trend by the time your album's finished. You never know. So you just always have to keep your ear to the ground and keep up with the pulse of what's going on, as well as creating your own niche at the same time. Now, I don't know if Leon was consciously aware of that or if that's just the way he cultivated what was going on, or maybe it's a combination of it all, plus the things that Shalamar was bringing into it, you know, because once we record an album, when we're in the studio recording an album, the songs are new to us. So we're doing as much as we can and within, you know, that perimeter of what we're doing. But once we take the songs on the road, now the songs, we start really living the songs, because now we're getting more used to them. And we're even on the road, we can start adding in more things because we know the songs much better now.
Right. Absolutely.
You know? And so, and that's the whole thing. So, and I don't know if, like, you know, the average person in the public is even aware of that process that takes place, because, you know, you hear a song, okay, you do the backgrounds, you do the lead vocals, you start adding in some ad-libs, you do this. Oh, okay, I think this is good. Boom. That song comes out, then you start living with it. That's when you start living with it. Once it's released,
right,
that's when it really starts, you know,
right,
for the artist, you know.
Yes.
And so, And you know, you were out on the road with us. Come on. You guys, Wardell Potts was, although he was a member of Dynasty and their drummer, although he was playing on all the solo records, he came out on the road with Shalamar for a while, and you were drumming with us on the road.
And you have
that infamous Zorro hat. You used to wear that Zorro hat, that black Zorro hat.
Yes, that was fun. I really, that was a highlight for me, because, you know, to go on stage with Dynasty and then to go off stage, listen to Lakeside, and then go back on again. It's like you get a second time around. You know? Every night I got a second time around with you guys. And it was just like, okay, let's go and do it again. Let's do it again. That was just so awesome. Yeah. So thanks for giving me that opportunity. Okay, so we're almost there. I just want to ask you one more thing here. Who designed the album cover? The album cover. Who was in charge of, like, picking, like, how we're going to dress, how we're going to look?
Okay, no one's ever asked that before. Let me tell you what happened. As I told you, Jody wanted to be a fashion designer, so Jody was very fashion conscious. For the Friends album cover, people are not going to believe this. Jody wanted to work with this photographer that she knew that did something in Vogue magazine or something like this. It was some photographer that she was aware of, and she said, we want this photographer for the Friends album. So they got the photographer. I think the photographer wasn't from L.A., so when he flew out there, he couldn't get a studio for us. So guess where we shot the album cover for the Friends album? In Jody's living room.
What?
So anybody who has a copy of the Friends album cover, you know, where the three of us are there, those are my guitars, that Flying V and that Jazz Fender bass that Howard's holding, those are both my guitars. But I brought my guitars along, and, you know, because that's when I was into the whole thing going on in London and stuff like that. I was kind of like rocking out a little with the new wave thing and all this and that. And so, yeah, so we shot it in Jody's living room.
That's amazing. Wow.
Let me tell you another story. The Three for Love album cover, because it's in black and white, Solar told us that they wanted us to wear our stage costumes, and we didn't want to. We wanted to look more natural, and I wanted a black and white photo. It was somebody I saw that had a black and white photo, and it looked so warm, just the texture of it. Mm. And and Solar's going, no, you guys need that color. You guys are Shalamar, and you represent dance music and this and that and that. So we went to Gribbit, That's where they did the album covers. And we put on our costumes, and we stood there, and we did the photo session. When the session was over, I said, how much time do we have? And the photographer said, oh, you guys have X amount of time. I said, come on. Me, Jody, and Howard went to the dressing room and put on our clothes, went and sat on the floor, and the photographer took our picture. So Dick called us for a meeting, and we went to his office, and Dick pulled up a colored picture of us in our costumes, and then he pulled up a black and white picture of us sitting on the floor with each other, and he said, my God, this is the photo. And that's what we put together.
There you go. Man, oh man. Wow, Jeffrey Daniels.
So when you
see
the Grief for Love album cover, that's what that was.
Yes, there you go. All right, so just so you know, everyone knows, or anybody just tuned in, we are talking with Jeffrey Daniels from Shalimar. And like I said, he's overseas, and we're gonna try to keep this as short as possible. Jeffrey, I want to get to what, this has been a great interview. I want to get just to what are you now that, you know, Shalimar, you know, I mean, you guys aren't, you're recording, but Shalimar is not recording, right? You guys aren't recording, right?
Well, not except for the song we did called The Real Thing. If you guys go on YouTube or whatever and look for Shalimar, The Real Thing, we did that how many years ago? That might be about 5 years ago now or something like that. I forgot, you know, because of the lockdown period, we lost 2 years, so it's difficult now to measure time. But if we do something else again in the studio, but people are enjoying the legacy of hits, and that's why people come out to see Shalimar, because they love this music that is the soundtrack of their lives. So we may do something from time to time, but it's not a pressure for us to go in and like, oh, we got to come out with a record. We have to come out with a song. I don't know. But so on my own, I'm just exercising my own creativity. So while we were on lockdown, I took the opportunity to address what we were going through. So I put out the song, Make Love Great Again, because Donald Trump was saying, Make America Great Again. And I'm like, okay, America? But now this is a global community, you know? And shouldn't we make the UK great too? And Africa should be great. And shouldn't Haiti be great? And shouldn't, you know, Jamaica be great? Shouldn't Europe be great? Or Japan be great? Why just America, you know? So I put out the song, Make Love Great Again, because we can all be great. Mm-hmm. Then I just put another song out called Back to the World. And look at the direction that we're all going in as humans. You know, we're getting more racially divided as we go along, which is crazy because we've all been on this planet together for how long? You know, and look at what's happening now in Ukraine, the things that are going on in Syria, you know, all the discourse that's going on in the world. These are very tumultuous times, you know, that we're living through. So I put a song together called Back to the World. Let's stop, you guys, and let's take it back to being human again. Let's take it right back and start it again, because we can be better. The youth are so engrossed in all this materialism, like, you know, how much jewelry they have around their neck, how expensive their car is. It's got to be seen in designer name clothes. You guys, that's not life. Those are just the perks of living. In fact, it's overindulgence of it. But life is about family. It's about love. It's about mankind. It's about nature. Nature sustained us. You destroy nature, what do we have? You know? And
Absolutely. So
I think we need to go back and concentrate and look more inwards with each other. Stop having all this religious division, you know? If you guys want to worship your creator through Jesus, okay, fine. If you want to worship him through Allah, okay, fine. If you want to worship him through Buddha, the fact is we're worshiping him, you guys. What's the problem?
Yeah.
You know? And if you're an atheist and you don't want to believe in a creator, that's okay because you're here. So that means that you weren't created, okay? You can't look at something that's been made and just assume, oh, no one made it. You know,
right,
so
right.
This is, we're all living in the middle of this big gift that's called creation, life. regardless of how long or short your life is, just the fact that you were here, that's a miracle within itself. And we should treasure it more than we are, you know.
Absolutely.
What's going on in Ukraine, forget about the politics and about it and stuff, but how do you tell your soldiers, I want you to guys to go over there and start killing people because they don't agree with me? That is some caveman mentality, Cro-Magnon caveman mentality, that if you don't agree with me, we're going to go over there and kill you. But the crazy thing is, after you kill enough people and after you destroy enough infrastructure and buildings, you're going to come up with some kind of agreement anyway. So why not sit down long enough and iron it out before you even get to the point that we need to kill people in order for them to agree with us? We need to evolve as humans. We need to be, we're not evolving as humans because this has been going on for how long? And if that style of warfare and politics continue, what do we have to look for in the future, that one day it'll come on us because somebody doesn't agree with our policy or we don't agree with them, so now let's go and kill each other and fight?
Yeah.
We have to get past that as a species. As a species, we have to evolve past that. And you know the funny thing about it, in school, what did they teach us in school, in kindergarten? If you have a disagreement with one of the students, the last thing you should do is fight. And if you get into a fight, shake hands, hug, and make up and be friends. How come our leaders don't adhere to that? How come our leaders can't circumvent going out to kill each other because they have a disagreement?
Absolutely.
And we think it's normal, a war. Oh, there's going to be a war. There should never be a war. Ever.
Yes.
Ever. You should never take away human lives. Get those guys to agree with each other. Get these leaders to sit down and iron out their things and come up with some type of, you know, I don't know, man, but this is where we are as a species.
Right.
And we've got to evolve past it. We've got to evolve. So I'm doing my part to try to help enlighten people and help inspire them, us, to be better.
There you
Me
go.
Me too. All of us, you know? All of
yes.
us.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it. Hey, I want to introduce you to my co-host, Mr. Don Fleming. Don, this is Jeffrey Daniel.
How you doing, Don?
Hey, I'm good. Just came in. Actually, I just got back from a funeral, so I was just here to just listen to you guys just, you know, tell these stories and, of course, sending prayers to Ukraine and all these things that are going on, man. I love to hear, you know, Jeff's insight on it, man. It's like an elder, just listening to an elder just go. Actually, both of you, because both of you are elders.
Oh, that's our onus and our license. When you get old enough, you know, now you get to tell stories, you get to talk, and, you get to make your voice heard. You
right.
know? But, you know, the last thing I want to say, too, about this whole thing going on in Ukraine. If you watch CNN, they have different programs with different, you know, how to say, the anchormen or different, different hosts for different shows. But on each show, they're constantly showing the same thing, as if there's nothing else happening in the world but the war in Ukraine. Of course, it's a point of focus, but shouldn't what's happening in Haiti be exposed? Shouldn't what's happening in Syria, what's happening in Mali, what's happening in other places? Because it's happening in Europe, so now suddenly it should get so much attention. But I think this type of thing happening anywhere in the world, it should be so exposed so that people can find a way to eradicate all this senseless killing. And then, you know, the sad thing about it, it's the innocent people who get killed and die. The leaders, they don't go on the battlefield. They say, go out and get them. The leaders don't even get involved. So why are innocent people being losing their lives like that? It's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
Let me just say this and piggyback off what you were saying, Jeff. I think
your microphone. Don, your mic is backwards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Come closer or something.
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
No,
in the house.
I was just saying that, you know, it exposed the true narrative of some people and how they feel about what you may call, quote-unquote, third-world countries in some of the some of the things that a lot of these anchors said, that say, look, we're not a third world country. We're not the Middle East. We're Europe, you know, or
exactly.
This did not happen. This is happening in a so-called civilized world. So it's, you know, they're pretty much telling on themselves when they say these things.
I did a video and I put it on YouTube because I do these commentaries. And not to offend anyone, I caution my people. If I say the Europeans, or if I say the Westerners, or the whites, or the Africans, I'm not talking about individual people. I'm talking about the people within that group that are making these policies. But I have to tell you guys something, and we have to really look back at it. We have been conditioned that Westernization equates to civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily true. Just because it's westernized means that it's civilized. No, that's not true. In fact, it's almost further than the truth. And as you said, third world. Isn't it funny that they call third world countries? These are some of the oldest civilizations ever on this planet. How in the heck are we third world?
Exactly.
We created civilization.
And think about
it. These places.
Yeah, and it's the simple things. You think about, you know, the United States or the quote-unquote Western world, you know, not having, you know, people, all its people with access to health care. If we're a first world, if we're supposed to be this first world apparatus and leader to mm-hmm. all these other countries, and if we don't treat our own people, you know, with a certain way of dignity, mm-hmm. then what does that tell about us? You know?
Yep. So. And the bottom line to that, goes back to, and I don't want to drag out the card again, but it's just the honest to God truth. It goes out to inequality, you know, the inequality. Because, like, countries that are more, that have a more homogenous population, like
mm-hmm.
Japan,
mm-hmm.
they have health care mm-hmm. for everybody. Somewhere like the UK, they have health care for everybody. So, you know, but America is a mixture of many different people, you know, and
yep.
so it's the inequality that is causing that to happen. And so now you've got that portion of the country begging that we need this. Why don't we have this? You know, so we, as I said, we have to evolve. We have to grow as a species. We have to grow as humanity. We have to get past all these things.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Well, we only got about 10 minutes left in the show. Almost 10 minutes left in the show. I want to play your song here, Jeff. And then when we come back, Jeff, can you just tell people how they can follow you and support your, you know, what you're doing musically, your website or whatever. Give us a set. We're going to take a break here. We want to play Jeff's song. This is Jeff. What's the title of the song? Back to the world. And we'll be back with Jeffrey Daniel and Don Fleming and myself, Wardell Potts Jr., right after this.
Matter, surely I matter too, but the only life that killing off us darker than you. Let's go back to the, let's take it back, act like humans. It's going around. So they had to ask us to wear masks and stay on lockdown. Yeah. It seems like technology is taking over so fast. If the human race don't take first place, I doubt it will last. The cost of living is up. The government just keeps minimum wages so low. Our politicians are losing the plot, I know. But we have to choose a candidate between what we got. If we don't stand together, we'll go extinct. And I don't see nothing social about social distance.
Let's go back.
Now come on.
Let's take it back. Act like humans again.
Come on and take it back.
Song is on Spotify. I guess it's on the usual outlets, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, whatever like that. You could go on YouTube and give it some hits, you guys, if you guys want to go on YouTube and support it. If you heard it, tell a friend. If you haven't, listen to it and tell a friend. And I'm on jeffreydaniel.com, but I like to communicate with people through my Facebook, Jeffrey Daniel. Only Jeffrey Daniel, because there's a Jeffrey Daniel Shalimar, there's two, but Jeffrey Daniel is the one that I really cater to. There's a Jeffrey Daniel Instagram, but I never really got on there, but I think I got to get involved with it, because a lot of people are doing that. But by the time I get around to it, we'll all be in the metaverse, so the metaverse will be here. But anyway, but just do the usual channels like that, Jeffrey Daniel Facebook, jeffreydaniel.com, I'm a simple guy.
Okay. Hey Jeff, do you remember coming into the studio and boxing? Did you come in and box? At Studio Masters?
Yeah, Studio Masters. They were boxing room. We had the gloves.
Okay, so you were one of those boxers too? You were hanging out with us? I can't remember. I never boxed you.
I mean, just a little. I mean, you know how skinny I was back then? As skinny as I am now, so I wouldn't have been much of a boxer. I would have made a good punching bag.
You know, Jeff, when you were saying in your story earlier about Soul Train, you were the little guy. Does that mean that you're just skinny? Because you're always tall, right?
Yeah, I was always tall. You know, before people knew my name, because they used to see me dancing on Soul Train. So for a couple of years, I was, the tall, skinny guy with the afro. Oh, that's the tall, skinny guy with the afro. That was my name, the tall, skinny guy with the afro, until we finally got in Right On magazine and people saw the name Jeffrey Daniel. Then a name was attached to the tall, skinny guy with the afro.
Wow. That's funny. Well, man, well, we are so blessed, and thank you for coming on Solar Records Radio, man. And this is your home place. We will keep your legacy alive here. We love you and appreciate you. And, man, you are just a living legend, and we're so blessed because of you, man. So keep on doing what you do. And
I be stingy for a second?
Stingy? Yeah, go ahead.
I want to be stingy. I want to be stingy for a second. I got to get Jeff on my show.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying. I got to get Jeff on my show. That's
called greedy.
Greedy, stingy, greedy, okay.
Hook it up. Hook it up, Wardell. Hook it up. Wardell, to hook it up. But, okay. but I mean, thank you. Thank you very much for the compliment, Wardell. But you, I am so proud of you and what you are doing, Wardell. And I want to say this. I want to put this out there. Okay, I'm going to put this out there. Of course, the legacy you laid down as a member of Dynasty and like the official drummer of Solar Records on tour with Shalamar, all of that. I am so proud of what you're doing with your personal life that I see what you're doing. And you are just a shining example for others to follow. And you, the way that you show the love between you and your partner, and the love you have for, you know, your church and Christ and stuff, you know, you're putting it out there to show people, and you're living by example. We can get on the radio and this and that, and we can talk about it, but you're not just talking the talk. You're walking the walk. And we need people like that to walk the walk, because others need to see that walk so we can walk along with that walk. And I just wanted to put that out there and just to compliment you and tell you how proud I am of what you have done with the evolution of your own life and your own self and your own spirituality. So, you know, I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Man, that means a lot coming from you. I appreciate it very much, man. And I just treat people the way I want to be treated, man. I love when people, it's because I want to be loved by people. And I just pray that, you know, somehow God quickens the heart of this man in that country, Russia. He could just quicken his heart and teach him how to love and not to hate, but to love. It would just be a blessing for the world, you know. Anyway.
It could work. All of the leaders, you know, reprioritize that love for your country and for your material wealth, but love for people as humans, because it's only humans. We're only people on this earth, you know?
Absolutely.
So we have to, you know? Yeah. Okay.
Well, guys, we are running out of time here. We got 1 minute left in the show, and I want to close out with Jeffrey Daniels' song, Make Love Great Again.
Make Love Great Again.
And we love you, Jeffrey. And thank you again, man.
I love you too, man. Nothing but love for you, man.
Okay, brother.
See you, Don. Take care, Don.
Okay.
Okay.
You too.
Okay, Don. Catch you later, buddy. All right. Love you, guys.
All right. Love is a
equality. Come on. Racism only breeds catastrophe. There's only one earth and we're just residents. So for what it's worth, demand your president. Make love great again. Make love great again.
Love now. Come on, spread your love now.